on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm Jordan in the clutch, boy. You bitten on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about?
All righty, guys, we are here for another episode of the Auto Bid. I am Aaron Robinson, joined as always by my twin brother Andrew Robinson. And today we're joined by a special guest. We got former DeMatha head coach and New Virginia Tech associate head coach Mike Jones. Coach, thanks for coming on today.
I appreciate y'all having me, man. I'm excited for this.
No problem, man. We want to, as always, remind you guys to make sure you guys are liking and subscribing to this podcast. Give us a rating wherever you are listening to this podcast. We appreciate all the shares, all the likes, the ratings. If anybody, tell a friend, man, definitely that does go a long way. Also, want to remind you guys to listen to my guy, Pull Up Tay's music. That was him on the intro. So make sure you guys are listening to his new project, Life Ain't Fair, is out on all platforms. But this guy, Mike Jones here, man, he's the man of the hour today. So we're gonna go ahead and get right into it, Coach. I don't wanna mince words or anything, man. You obviously have been coaching at DeMatha for 19 seasons, and you just recently accepted a job to become the associate head coach at Virginia Tech, man. So the first thing I want to ask you, man, is, you know, what has been the transition like, you know, over the past week or so, you know, just kind of from accepting the job to now obviously being in your new role and having to kind of switch your mindset from being head coach at DeMatha to now being, you know, the associate head coach at Virginia Tech?
The biggest thing is I got to learn all these rules. Like, you know, I still have stuff I got to do at school, but I have to make sure that, you know, I got to go get my stuff. I got to clean my office out. I got to, you know, handle a couple of things there, tie up a couple of loose ends. And, like, I have to avoid our players. Like, I can't. Like, you know, I love them to death. They know we're always going to be family. But, you know, under the circumstances now, I have to be very careful of that. So, you know, yesterday, like, I literally had to stand in my car and send somebody in to get something for me that I needed so I didn't have to worry about bumping into anybody as I walked through the gym. So, I mean, that's the biggest thing so far. You know, I literally accepted the job on Monday. You know, it's Thursday. Like, I mean, I'm still trying to wrap my mind around you know, big AAU weekend this weekend. So, you know, being able to reach out to some of the guys that we're going to be recruiting, you know, is something I'm looking forward to doing. And, like, I got a lot of stuff to learn, a lot of stuff to work through, but I'm excited. I'm very excited about the opportunity.
Now, Coach, man, obviously, you know, like Ace mentioned, you know, you've been at DeMatha for 19 years. Won a lot of titles, man. I don't want to get to reading your resume because we'd be here for a couple hours, man. But
it was 8 WCAC titles, 511 wins over 19 years.
6 titles. I mean, I don't want to. I mean, let's just go.
Something like that.
So, Coach, man, I want to ask you, though, man, because I know that, you know, this probably wasn't the first job that came your way that you could have taken. What specifically made Virginia Tech the job that you wanted to jump at? Because I know that a guy like you, obviously, you probably have seen a lot of different D1 jobs come your way. What made this the job that you want to take, and what made this the right time to make that leap to college basketball?
It's a few things, but I think the main reason is because of Coach Young. You know, Coach Mike Young is the head coach at Virginia Tech, and I truly feel like in my career, he is someone that I can learn a tremendous amount from. You know, I really embrace that. Like, you know, from my background at DeMatha with Coach Wooten to my background with USA Basketball with Coach Showalter, like, those were two individuals that were so impactful in my coaching career because I was able to learn so much from them. And I believe Coach Young is the exact same thing, the exact same person. Like, and I'm looking forward to that. But beyond that, This job is different. Like, the role is different. Like, you know, times that I've been approached before, whether the coach said it or not, like, the expectation I got was, hey, I need you to recruit. I need you to give me some players. And, you know, I'm a basketball coach. Recruiting is part of the game. And, yes, I'm going to do the best job I possibly can to recruit. But Coach Young approached me in a totally different way. Like, he made it very clear that he wants to teach me what it's like to be a college head coach. Like, he wants me to be involved in all aspects of it, you know, whether it's the X and O's on the floor, whether it's, you know, making sure we have the budget done, whether it's the academic planning that has to go for the young men to make sure they stay on track to get what they want, to recruiting, to fundraising, to like all of that stuff. And he's the first coach to really approach me with that kind of vision for me. And that really means a lot to me, because you see me as more than just somebody that can help you get players, but you truly value me as a teacher and as an educator, and as someone that can establish relationships and maintain those. So that was the biggest, the two biggest things for me. There's a bevy of reasons, but that those two were the key factors in what separated this opportunity from other opportunities that I've turned down in the past.
Yep. Now, you mentioned in your article with the Washington Post that you had turned down at least one job, you know, at least over the past 15 seasons in college. I mean, you know, why now? Why leave the mat where you're, you know, at one of the prestigious high schools, you know, programs in the history of high school basketball? You know, why leave, you know, to go and coach in college? I mean, you know, people have been saying, you know, the mat is, you know, the one of the best jobs in the country. You know, why leave now? And why Virginia Tech? You know, I know you mentioned Mike Young, but is there anything above that that made you want to leave at this point in time?
I think, you know, it's to put it bluntly, I guess, you know, at some point in time in my career, I've kind of like, you know, I'll be at DeMatha until I'm 65, 70, you know, obviously as long as they'll have me. You know, obviously Coach Wooten was able to coach for such a long time, win a lot of games, and I'm a motivated guy. I will never be the coach that Coach Wooten was. Like, I know that. Like, and I'm okay with that. But, I mean, he set that bar. There's 1,274 wins up there. And, you know, I'm like, if I'm going to stay at DeMatha, then you know what? I'm going after that. And I'm going after that, but I'm not, you know, I'm going to play the toughest schedule I can play. I'm going to make sure my kids get exposure. I'm going to make sure I'm doing right by my guys, getting them into school. I'm going to be the mentor that I need to be for them as they grow into adults to become husbands and fathers and, you know, all of that that comes along with that. So I pretty much, for probably the last 10, 12 seasons, I thought that's what my legacy is going to be. And then this job comes. Like, you know, the offer comes. It was out of the blue. I actually thought Coach Young was calling to ask me about one of my former assistants to get kind of a recommendation for him. And the offer blew my mind. I took time to think about it with my wife. And, I mean, it was just, I guess it came down to, if I'm ever going to pursue that next challenge that's kind of always been there, but, again, wasn't necessarily something I wanted to pursue. But this opportunity comes, like, you know, you pray on it a little bit, you know, God agrees that this is the path that I'm supposed to take. And, you know, my sermon from the church that I watch, you know, with my wife every Sunday, you know, this past Sunday, so before the decision is finally made on Monday, the sermon was about God telling you what to do and you being obedient and doing it. And that probably was kind of like the final straw for me in confirmation that this is what I'm supposed to do. So that's how I got here, and I can't wait to get down to Blacksburg and pour into that program as much as I can and learn as much as I can.
Yeah. Now,
sorry for the long answer, but I mean that's what it is.
That's perfect. That's perfect, man. And you know, I want to ask, man. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, me and my brother are two DC Warriors guys. You know, played for Coach Tony Langley, man. And perfect. I can remember growing up, man. When I was 11, 12 years old, man, watching a guy by the name of Nigel Munson and Jeff Allen that played at Virginia Tech, that you also coached at DeMatha, man. And I wanted to ask you, man, like, you know, you've coached a plethora of players, man. I've gone to various schools, played in the NBA, man. But what are you most excited about going into Blacksburg, being the coach at Virginia Tech? I mean, what are you most looking forward to, you know, stepping into the ACC, you know, the best conference in the country? You know, what are you most looking forward to about this next challenge, man?
The players. The relationship with the players, the relationships I'll build with the staff. You know, basketball is a relational business. If you don't have relationships, no matter how good your talent is as a player or as a coach, like there's going to be a limit to how successful you can be. So I'm very much looking forward to that. I think one of the biggest things for me that I'll miss, and you know, you can talk to anybody that's ever played for me, like, yo, sometimes I'm not very easy to play for. Like, I'm hard on guys. I'm challenging to them. I'm going to hold them to a standard. But I mean, I've never had a kid come back. You know, they might be mad when they leave, but I've never had a kid come back and still be angry. Like, they get it after they get out of the door. And now I'm going to be working with guys a little bit older, a little bit more mature, and they might be in that place already. So our relationship and the relationship that I hope to be able to build with the guys is going to be that much stronger. Like, all in all, they'll know I care about them, I love them, and I want what's best for them. Nothing that I've ever done in this game has been for me. And I'm going to always have that. I'm always going to have that attitude. So I'm just looking forward to those relationships. And then again, Coach Young's got a great staff, Kevin Gildner, Christian Webster. Like, I cannot wait to work with those guys. I've heard so much about both of them. I've known Christian. Christian went to Landon up here, so I'm looking forward to working with him. And then KG is a very decorated, or was a very decorated player with Coach Young before they came to Virginia Tech. And, like, I'm ready to go, man. One of my college rivals, Ace Custis, played at Virginia Tech. He's on the basketball staff there as well. His office, I believe, is right across the hall from my office. So I'm looking forward to reconnecting with him. I mean, there's this, it's a family atmosphere down there, and I'm happy to join the family.
Yeah, bro. Shout out to Christian Weber, man. We actually played with his sister at Quinnipiac. She was on the women's team, man. So I'm definitely familiar with him, man. DMV guy, man. So definitely a small world out here.
Now, Coach, we mentioned earlier, obviously, you know, you took over at the Mathem when you were 29 years old, 19 seasons, 511 wins, 8 WCC titles. I mean, coached countless, you know, high major guys, pro guys. You got 5 guys in the NBA now. I mean, what about the job that you've done there over the last 19 years you think has prepared you for this opportunity now at Virginia Tech?
I've had to do a little bit of everything. And so, though I have a lot to learn, but I have a foundation in every aspect of it. Like, I was laughing earlier this morning. So one of the guys on Instagram that always posts old school pictures from D.C., Baltimore, Northern Virginia, and everything, you know, he gave me a little shout out this morning with some clippings of articles throughout my career. And one of the articles he posted was literally the article from my first year and from my very first practice at DeMatha as the head coach. So that's November 15th, 2002. And then one of the pictures in the article is me and Austin Freeman. And Austin Freeman's an eighth grader. And, like, I was laughing this morning because I remember that day like it was yesterday. So I know that the Washington Post is there because this is the first practice without Coach Wood and everything like that. So, they're there and they're taking pictures and everything. And so I'm sitting there talking to Austin. And I'm trying to look like I'm, you know, I'm a normal coach. Like, I'm not nervous, anything like that. And then I remember I got up after he finished taking pictures and I walked over to him and I'm saying, hey, my man, any chance you can make sure that the picture with me and Austin is in the article? And he looked at me and I was like, yo, I'm telling you, he's the best eighth grader out. Like, this would really help. And he goes, I got you, coach. And lo and behold, that article goes in there. So what I did was, for Austin's entire eighth grade year, I would send a copy of that picture to him, like almost once a week. Lo and behold, Austin comes to DeMatha. He's on my first 3 championship teams. Goes on to be an All-American at Georgetown. But, like, literally, that story this morning just let me know that, like, yo, you've been through a lot of things. You've kind of carved out a niche for recruiting, for X's and O's, for player development, for game planning, for scouting, for all of that. And, like, I'm ready to take all the skills that I believe I do have and then have somebody teach me how to be better at them. And I'm really, really, really excited about that.
Now, man, I do want to, you know, rewind a little bit, man, because I want to talk about, you know, your journey, man, because you're on just as coach, man. I mean, you was a player and you was a bucket back in the day, man. You know, you went to Old Dominion, you know what I'm saying? You scored over 1,000 points at Old Dominion, you know, went to the NCAA tournament, played overseas, man. So just talk to me a little bit about your journey, man, from, like, the player Mike Jones to how you got into coaching,
how you ended up at DeMatha, and then now, you know, obviously where we're going to now at Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I get mad sometimes, man, because in my bio, they never mention. Like, I signed as a free agent with the Indiana Pacers, and no one ever puts that. And then I played in two preseason games. But, like, yo, like, I mean, I was proud. You know, like, when I first went to DeMatha, there were so many people telling me, like, you'll never play there. And then, you know, I just, like, I'm proud of that fact. So, like, I get mad when every time I see my bio, I'm just like, yo, where's the 3-week NBA experience I had? Like, where is that?
So, that's important. That's the step.
Like, there's a lot of people don't get that far. So, and then I always tell my guys that obviously I've had quite a few that have been able to go on. I always tell them, like, hey, like, I can get you to where I got to. Your work ethic will get you past that. So, and I know how to help you do that. So, but no, the journey has been, I mean, I've been a worker my whole life. You know, when I was young, I worked my rear end off trying to be the best player I could be. At DeMatha, you had to fight every single day. Like, when I became a starter, I always thought today is going to be the day somebody takes my spot. And that's the approach I had. You know, when I got to college, it wasn't easy. I didn't play much my first 2 years. A lot of people were like, man, you need to get out of there. You should transfer. It worked out for me. I wound up playing. So those, you know, over 1,000 points, that pretty much was in my last two seasons because I didn't do much my first two. But we won. And one thing that I've always been proud about is, like, I cannot remember a team I've played on that has not been a championship contender. And I always told myself at DeMatha, like, you know, everybody gets to November 8th, the first day of practice, and says championship is the goal. But, like, literally every single year at DeMatha, it's not just the goal. We truly expect to be there and expect to be there. And that's who I am as a coach. And I want to bring that mentality to anywhere I go. And talking to Coach Young and knowing a couple of the players that they have, like, that's their mentality too. So, again, I think it's a perfect fit. And my journey, I think, fits right into, like, what I'm going to be able to bring to Virginia Tech basketball.
Okay. So, I do want to ask a quick follow-up. Like, so from your playing career, like, what was that moment? Like, how did you initially end up at DeMatha as a coach? Like, from when you finished playing overseas, how did you initially get into coaching and then end up at DeMatha?
Okay, so in 97, I was playing, and in the summer when I was home, or in the spring when I was home, Mr. Moylan, John Moylan, was the principal at DeMatha then. And Mr. Moylan was the principal when I was a student at DeMatha. And he pretty much had kind of planted the seed in my head a little bit that, you know what, like, you carried yourself well enough here as a student, like, if you're ever interested in coming back. And that was just, like, had nothing to do with basketball. I got my degree in human services and counseling. Mr. Moylan knew that, so he actually was encouraging me to come back so I could work in the guidance counseling office at DeMatha. So I actually interviewed for a job in 97 to be a guidance counselor. I got the job, and Coach Wooden was going to put me on staff. But I got a call, like, right at the end of the summer to play another season somewhere. So the bug wasn't out of me yet, so I called DeMatha and was like, hey, I'm gonna give this one more shot. So I went over and played in Portugal, came back, finished the season in North Dakota. After the season, went to Hong Kong and played. And then that was my last professional job. I had gotten an ankle injury in Portugal. I was able to kind of play through it. Got to North Dakota, it got a little bit worse. And then in Hong Kong, it was awful. Like, I never really gave it the time it needed to heal and to rehab it. So, things are so different now. I'd still be playing, shoot, if that same thing happened now. But injury was bad enough to basically sideline me. And, again, John Mullen came back around. It was just like, you know, basically, are you finished chasing the ball yet? And so at that point in time, like, it was no telling when I'd be healthy. So I went ahead and accepted it then and immediately started coaching. I was assistant freshman coach my first year. And things just kind of took off from there. So.
Now, obviously, you had an opportunity to coach with Morgan Wooten. I mean, what were those days like coaching there, you know, under Morgan Wooten? What did you learn from him, you know, in those days on his bench? And then obviously being able to translate that to your,
you know, head coaching opportunity that you got in 2002?
Well, the one big thing with Coach was shut up and listen. Like, literally, you know, we go to dinner after every game. We go to Lido's. And when I was assistant coach on the freshman team, I was just happy to be invited to go to dinner. So as you sat there, you ate your pizza, you drank your drink, and you just listened. And the stories he would tell, the insight he had into everything was just, it was an honor to sit there. And then as I moved up the table to the point where I could sit on one side of him, me on one side, Neil Murphy on the other side, and now you're contributing to those conversations, but you still knew, like, you could kind of tell that look in Coach's eye when he was just getting ready to, like, you know, most older people, they start to tell a story, you're just sitting there like, oh, like, never with Coach, never. Like, he had you hanging on every word that came out of his mouth. It was truly a pleasure to be around that. And then he remained that, even after I became the head coach. Any opportunity I had to spend some time with him, he was still that. He was always so sharp, like so sharp. He could remember anything. And if I had any issue or something I needed some guidance on how to work through, I could reach out to him and he'd either talk to me briefly on the phone or he'd say, hey, you can come by the house, or, hey, I'll be up at school later and we would be able to sit and talk. And it was just an honor to be able to learn as much as I did from him. And then all the stuff that had nothing to do with the words he said, but just how he carried himself. He was the classiest, most gentlemanly person, gentlemanly coach that you could find anywhere. And he was a great example for me to kind of watch. And, you know, I couldn't be him and I can't be him, but there's definitely certain aspects that I embrace.
Now, I want to touch on another aspect of your kind of coaching experience that also, you know, helped you get to this point. That's your role with USA Basketball. I mean, you're wearing a shirt right now. Obviously, you know, you've been able to coach the Night Hoop Summit with USA Basketball 3 times. You were then the USA Developmental Coach of the Year in 2019. Obviously, you coached the U16 national team and on. But talk about your role with USA Basketball. And I mean, what experience has been like, man, coaching a plethora of, I mean, the best players in the country, NBA guys. And what has that been like, man, just being a part of USA Basketball, man? How has that also contributed to your coaching experience, you know, thus far?
It's been unbelievable. It's been unbelievable. Unfortunately, on Monday when I accepted this job, right before I had to make the call to USA to basically, I don't know if you want to call it resign, but I had to forfeit my title as head coach of the U16, U17 national team because there's definitely a conflict there. So I could no longer continue that. We literally are supposed to get on a plane on this coming Monday to fly to Houston for minicamp. So, you know, my vacating a spot has helped two of my best friends in high school coaching have an opportunity. Like, one of the coaches that was already on staff with me now gets to be the head coach. And then one of my great friends, I can't really say because I don't know if it's public, but one of my great friends in the coaching business in this area is going to now be able to be on that staff. And like, I'm disappointed. Like, I'm very disappointed I won't be able to do it, but I'm so happy for both of those individuals. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, Morgan Wooten, I coached under Don Showalter, and Don Showalter is literally, his nickname in FIBA basketball is Mr. Perfect. Like, he never lost a game. 10 years, 10 gold medals. I don't know what the number is. I'm going to say it's like 67-0 or something like that. He never lost a game. And, you know, it was a joke going around like, hey, Mike Jones followed behind Coach Wooten. So, like, he'll at least know how to follow behind Don Showalter. And, I mean, that's just a totally different beast there. Like, you know, international basketball is different than American basketball, high school basketball. Playing for Coach Wooten, who I do believe is the greatest coach ever, 1,274 wins. But to go follow behind someone who's never lost a game is just a totally different beast. And funny thing is, my very first game, official game in FIBA as head coach, was in Belém, Brazil in June of 2019. And my very first game, we are getting our butts kicked. It is 27-5. At the end of the first quarter, like it was bad. And again, this is the first time that Don Showalter wasn't on the side because he started the program. So literally, not only is he undefeated, USA at that level has never lost. And we are getting blown out of the gym. And yeah, like it was, I had to definitely do some soul searching without losing my cool. And we wound up fixing it and we came back. I think we won by 20. But oh my gosh, you talk about pressure. And I'm not a guy that looks at anything like pressure, but you know, that's the closest I've ever been to it. How about that?
Now, I want to ask you, Coach, I mean, you know, obviously you'll always be a part of the Matha family, but I mean, what will you miss most, you know, about being the coach at the Matha, you know, being on campus every day at that school and just being around the people over there at the Matha?
The joke is amongst my staff. I met with my staff last night. The joke is I won't have Nike boxes showing up to my front doorstep, you know, 2-3 times a month with more stuff in it than I know what to do with. So that's the joke. So, you know, obviously, yeah, my coaching career has way more to do than gear. So I think the biggest thing is just going to be the relationships I have with the kids. Like right now, it's really tough because I know they're going through a time just like I am. And like, you know, some of them, they need me. They need my counsel, but I can't talk to them. Like, you know, the freshmen and sophomores, like I'm not allowed to. They can call me and I can answer the phone, but if they call me and I don't answer because I'm doing something, I can't call them back. If they send me a text, I cannot respond to the text. Like, those are the rules I have to follow right now. Juniors and seniors are a little bit different, but, you know, the young guys that I was just starting to build and that budding relationship with, yeah, like, that's the toughest part. Like, you know, I have to, you know, kind of pump the brakes a little bit on what was really growing into, you know, what my family is. And I had to have one of the team moms kind of send an email out to all the families to kind of explain that, because I don't want these kids thinking, oh, hey, Coach Jones took the job, now he can't even return my call, or that he can't even, like, this. I mean, this part, you know, bluntly, it sucks. Like, it really does. But, you know, I have a job to do. I got to follow the rules because, you know, I think people will be really mad if everybody from the Matha starts listing Virginia Tech as a, like, so to avoid any of that, I got to make sure to the letter of the law, I follow everything. So that's probably the biggest thing that right now that I'm struggling with. But, you know, it is what it is.
Now, Coach, man, I mean, when you look back at your time at the Matha, when you're old and gray, man, and, you know, you're sitting at home, what do you want your legacy to be? What do you want people to remember, you know, Mike Jones's time at the Matha over these last 19 years to be?
I'll be honest with you. Somebody asked me that the other day. I have no thought to that at all. Like, I have no thought to that. Like, hopefully I got many more years on this earth if God blesses me with that. But I'm a what's next kind of guy. And, you know, I know I'm old if I start thinking about, man, that was a great ride. And like, if I start really reminiscing like that. So I try not to do that. Because that means you're coming to the end of the road. And like, I'm nowhere near trying to do that. So one day, you know, hopefully I can sit down and hopefully my faculties are still all about me and I'll be able to remember fondly so many things and I'll be able to kind of fellowship with guys who used to play for me. But right now, like, I'm full steam ahead on two things. One, getting to VTech and doing everything I can to make that program, help make that program the best that it can be. And then two, and any way that I'm allowed to, just make sure my guys are all right at the Matha. My legacy and all of that other stuff, yeah, I'll worry about that when I retire. And hopefully, again, that's no time soon.
Well, now, obviously, you know, the Matha has made a hire in an interim role right now. It's Peter Strickland, who's a Matha alum, obviously played at the Matha, coached at the Matha, coached 25 years in college, won a Big South Coach of the Year at Coastal Carolina. I mean, and they've now mentioned him as the interim head coach at the Matha. I mean, what are your thoughts on the hire? If you know Coach Strickland, I mean, what can you say about him as a person, and what do you think he'll be able to do at the Matha?
So, first of all, I know Coach Strickland very well. So, my final four schools before I picked Old Dominion was UNC Wilmington, BMI, Virginia Tech, Radford, and then Old Dominion, like, came in the spring. But those were the four schools in the fall. And Coach Strickland was the assistant coach at VMI, so he was recruiting me. Tick Price was an assistant coach at Virginia Tech. He was recruiting me. And then the head coach at Radford was Oliver Purnell. Obviously, he was recruiting me. Well, all three of them wound up on staff at Old Dominion when Coach Purnell got the job. So to me, again, it was a sign from God that, you know what, these are three schools that you really were thinking about. Now, the three people that you were in constant communication with are all at the same place. That is where you should go. But Coach Strickland recruited me. And then Coach Strickland, like, if you talk to anybody that has seen me play or watched me play, like, the one thing I could do is shoot the basketball. I give a lot of credit to my jump shot to Coach Strickland. Like, he was the one. Like, I played in the post in high school. I had to be a guard in college. I had to be a guard for the rest of my career. So Coach Strickland was one of the guys that literally would stay in the gym with me to get up shots. And, like, he really helped to develop the one thing that I was able to play the game for a much longer time because of, and that's my jump shot. So he's coming into a tough spot. Like, you know, and I can't speak about why decisions were made and things like that. I just know that Coach Strickland is a good coach. He can coach the game of basketball. His resume speaks for himself. I mean, he was a high-level assistant. You know, he coached in the ACC before. Like, you know, he's a really good coach. Ultimately, obviously, I feel a lot of ownership over the DeMatha basketball program. And if they let me make a decision, you know, obviously, I make a decision, I go with it. But, like, I don't have a choice here. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't do this or do that. But whoever they would have named, I have to support. Like, I have to. Because there are kids there that I care about. And those kids... like, if I don't support the coach, then that's going to be just a much tougher job for him to do well. And then you have kids that are questioning what, like, what's going to happen with them. So I care about DeMatha. I care about their program. But, you know, I also really, really, really care about those kids. So, like, I'm going to wish Coach Strickland well. Like, I hope he does well. He's the interim coach. What happens next, who knows? I can't, like, the administration that made the decision to bring him in, like, I don't want to speak for them. They can tell you why they did this, why they didn't do that. Like, I would have loved to have seen, and I still hope that the staff that I assembled is able to have a major role in what Coach Strickland does for the next however long he is the interim coach, so that those players will have people that they recognize, that they know have helped to develop them to the part. But it's going to be Coach Strickland's lead. And again, from what I know of Coach Strickland, he is more than capable of leading that. So now it's just a point of, you know, honestly, me encouraging my guys to give Coach Strickland a chance and to continue to pour into those players. And then, you know, I can't talk to the players. I wish I could, but, you know, basically tell them exactly what I just told you. Like, the man can coach. And you know what? There were people at DeMatha that probably didn't want me to be the interim coach when I got the job. Like, they maybe thought it should have been somebody else. But, you know, I got a shot and I was able to run with it. And it wasn't my fault either, though. Like, just because you don't agree with what a decision that was made from someone else, like, why take it out on the person that happened to benefit from? Like, I didn't hire myself. You know, Coach Strickland didn't hire himself. Like, give the man a chance. Like, give the man a chance. Like, DeMatha is DeMatha. There's a big standard to live up to there. Like, give him a chance.
Like, Coach, man, I mean, I don't know if you even knew this or not, but me and Ace, man, our older brother is actually Billy Edlin, who played at DeMatha. Obviously, you know, went to Syracuse, won that championship with Carmelo, man, in 03, man. We had the same mother. A lot of people don't even know that, man. But Billy was one of my biggest inspirations as far as basketball. Like, I went number 14 because of Billy, man.
Hold on. I got to tell you a story. Whoa.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to ask you.
So my first year back at DeMatha from playing, fresh off of playing, you know, it was 98-99. So Billy was a sophomore, and Keith and Joe were seniors. And obviously, the talent on that team was ridiculous. And we used to play 3-on-3 all the time. And it was me and two of the other coaches who, no offense to Court and Chris Pompey, but like, they were not good. Not good. But, I mean, they're grown men. And then right. We would play Keith, Joe, and Billy. Like, and so I immediately knew that Billy was good because Keith and Joe picked him. Like, you had all the guys you could pick from to go up and play against us, and they would always pick Billy. So that one gave me a clear indication Billy must be pretty good. And then, obviously, we know Keith and Joe went on. Keith got drafted. Joe got drafted. Like, you know, Keith played a long time in the NBA. Playing against them. And again, I'm in shape. Like, other than my ankle still not being, but, like, we ain't running up and down. It's 3-on-3, so I'm good. Like, this right. is not. Playing against them, this is God's honest truth. I can handle Keith. I can handle Joe. But Billy was the only one, even as a sophomore. Like, you just never knew. When he rose up, you didn't know if he was passing or shooting. Like, the other guys, you knew exactly. Like, he was so hard to guard, man. And I just remember that to this day. Like, he was just so freaking talented, man. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Now that's crazy, man. And that's why I wanted to ask you, man, because when you said that you were at the Matha in the 90s, I was like, hold on, man. Billy was at the Matha around that time, man. So I was wanting to know, like, what he was like around that time, man, like, what his game was like. Because obviously, you know, he's like 12 years older than me. So, man, I didn't really get to, like, see. Like, I mean, I watched the game when he was in college. But, like, when he was young at the Matha, I remember we went to his graduation at Oak Hill. But, I mean, I was really young, so I didn't really get to really know what he was like back then. People always tell you, yo, man, your brother was a bad dude. Your brother was a bad dude. I'm like, so, I mean, I wanted to ask you because I know you was there at the time, man. So, I mean, that's
I'm crazy. I'm going to tell you, Drew. So, again, I wasn't there as freshman year. Right. So I heard he was like a little chubby, but he could ball. Like, he'd have 30 points, and it'd be halfway through the third quarter. He played on the freshman team, but, like, you know, they said, when I got there, they was like, you know, Billy had just gone through a growth spurt, so all the baby fat and everything just went away, and he was. So I remember him like he just got really, really good, because I remember his junior year was when he really started to realize, like, he could take off and dunk on people. And I remember at the Matha, like, I'll never forget it. He goes up, so second half, because he does it in front of our bench. So our student section is on the opposite end of the floor. So your brother goes up, and he dunks the ball, like, dunks over somebody, and then swings around on the rim and points to Petey. To Frank Peterson.
Yeah.
Frank Peterson happened to be in the stands that day. So Billy dunked the ball, swung around, and then pointed all the way to the other end while he was still hanging on the rim to Petey. Coach Wooten could not get him out of the game fast enough. Like, like, I believe that there was a sub at the table before both Billy's feet hit the ground. Like, and, you know, this is coach is a little older. Like, he got up quick, grabbed somebody quick, basically threw them to the scores table. But that was the swag that Billy played with. Like, Billy was one of the first guys to really, like, especially at the Matha, you know, I compare him to, like, Adrian Branch. Like, they just had that swag with their game. And as much swag as they played with, it actually helped them play at a higher level because of that confidence that he brought with him. And Billy was one of those, man. He was so good. And then, you know, people, obviously, Carmelo had a lot to do with the national championship up at Syracuse. But people don't know, like, they don't win that without Billy. Like, yeah. Billy was just as important on that championship team as Carmelo was. But people don't remember that.
Sure.
Not for sure, man. People say that, man. I'm like, man, look, man, y'all go, I got to show him pictures and whatnot. Man, look, my brother was a pro. It's crazy you mentioned Petey, man, because I remember obviously going up with Coach Tony. Petey used to be at Coldfield Record working out with us with the DC Warriors. I'm like, yo, Petey, funny dude, man. It's crazy how everything comes full circle. And it's a small world, man. Everybody connected in some way. Coach, I wanted to ask you, man, just kind of final thoughts. I mean, what for you, man, what is obviously now you're in the college ranks. I mean, what is your end goal? Obviously, it's to be a college head coach. I mean, what is your goal, I guess, you know, now that you are, you know, in this new realm, when you look at kind of where you want your career to go from here?
Again, just like kind of I talked about not looking back, Like, I'm big on be where your feet are. And right now, my 2 feet are as associate head coach at Virginia Tech, and like that's where I am. So, if there's a next, I have no idea what that is. Like, that'll be, you know, up to God to show that whenever, if ever it comes. But that is not a concern of mine at all. I want to be the best coach I possibly can be in the Virginia Tech men's basketball program, and that is my focus. So. Nothing else really matters right now.
Now, I want to do one final question, man, on live note, man. You know, obviously, like I said, you've been around USA Basketball, man. You got any fun stories about those guys, man, about them NBA guys just being in practice? Or, I mean, any, like, wild moments from being in the gym with those guys?
I trust me. Like, one day I'm going to write a book. I'm definitely writing a book about DeMatha at some point in time. Actually, had I stayed at DeMatha, I probably would start writing a book like this summer. But because I'm no longer there, I think I'm going to wait a little bit on that for, you know, some personal reasons. And then I'm going to write a book about exactly what you just said. Like, me and a couple of the other USA coaches, we got a group chat, and we talk about, like, maybe some of the top 10 funniest things that have happened on our trips. And, like, they are, like, it's ridiculous. Anytime we get together and we start talking about it, like, we have some things that it's just like, how does that happen? Like, that makes no sense. But, again, I'm going to say that for the book. the one story that I would probably say is, so in 2012, we're playing World Championships in Lithuania. And the director of our team basically comes to us in front of the whole team. And we haven't gotten to the gold medal game yet, but he tells us, hey, Sean Ford, who's the director of all the national team programs, basically told us that, hey, if we win the gold medal, we're not going to fly you guys home. We're all going to fly to Vegas and go to the Olympic team's practice for 2 days, and then we'll fly you guys home from there if you want to. If you want to go straight home, we'll do that. And everybody's just like, no, we want to go to Vegas. Like, so we go to Vegas, and this is like this isn't the redeem team, but this is like the first real dominant team we have after some of the hiccups we had. So you get Kobe, you get LeBron, you get Chris Paul, you get Melo. Like, this is when Anthony Davis is like a nobody, but they keep him on the team because he's supposed to be good. Like, you get all of these guys, Westbrook, Kevin Love, like every one of them. Take a nice picture with them and everything. But the two things that stood out to me were this. Kobe, we're sitting in the gym, we're watching. Like, it's just a great atmosphere. It's pretty cool. And you see all the guys, like, shooting and everything like that. And then you look over on the far basket, and Kobe Bryant is over there. Like, you guys seen Above the Rim, the movie with Tupac?
Yeah.
Remember the guy Nutso? Playing basketball without a ball. Like,
yeah, you know, right,
that was Kobe. Kobe was over on the other gym, on the other court doing crazy footwork drills without a basketball in his hand. Like, he's sitting there jabbing, pivoting, and he does not have a ball. And he's doing it like it's the NBA Finals. And, like, I mean, just it was unbelievable to sit and watch that. And, again, everybody else, you know, shooting contests here and things like that. No, he's over there in his own world, just, I mean, killing himself. Absolutely 100% killing himself. So that's one. And then the second story is, so we got to do everything. You know, eat breakfast with him, everything, go into team meetings. So, like, literally, Coach K is the coach, and Coach K is the coach. I mean, he's as respected as you can be. And for me as a coach to be able to be in that environment, and they were talking about, hey, today we're going to put in a little bit of zone. Jim Boeheim is there. And we're also going to talk about our pick and roll coverage. And Coach K in that meeting basically says, look, I want to make sure you guys are comfortable. So how do you want to play? And, like, to watch LeBron, well, this is what I want to do. And Chris Paul, I think we should, and to watch that whole dynamic, and Coach K just totally back out of it and empower the players on the team to make those types of decisions, knowing that you're getting ready to go play in the Olympics. Like, you're getting ready to go play for a gold medal. Like, this is as incredibly important as anything. And for the coach to release control. Like, what coach does that? And that was a great lesson for me, because you coach this game long enough, you got to understand, like, yo, I know I may know this and I may love doing it this way, but if the players aren't comfortable doing that, like, it doesn't matter. So instead of coach trying to force them to do something he wanted to do, and think he empowered them to basically argue it out, figure out what they wanted to do, and they went on to win the gold medal. And you can watch in some of those games, especially against Spain, I think, that pick and roll coverage became very, very, very important. But all the guys on the court were so locked into it. And when you make a decision as a player, it better work. So you know you're going to give it everything you got to make sure it does work, instead of the coach is telling me to do this. I really don't want to do it this way. Like, it's a genius move. It is an absolute genius move, because you know you're going to get full effort no matter what, because it was your idea. So those are the two stories I have. I save, again, all the funny stuff for the books. But, yeah, like, I've been very blessed to be around some elite situations, man. Like, my career, God has really, really blessed me, and I hope to make many more.
Damn, man, I mean, Kobe's really a maniac over there. I mean, we've all heard it, man. But I mean, dude, the more you hear him, it's just like, wow, man, that dude is really like different.
Like, we're at LeBron camp in LA. I forget the year, and like, literally, you know, we get into they literally gutted a airport hangar and put courts in it. So we're in there for camp, and the rumors going around all day long. Hey, Kobe's going to come today. Kobe's going to come today. Kobe's going to come today. Forget the fact that playing pickup every day at lunch is LeBron, Anthony Davis, James Harden, Kevin Durant, like any Nike athlete you can think of, DeMarcus Cousins, they are all there playing pickup at lunch every day. But like, the whole buzz around LeBron, I mean, the camp is named after LeBron. The whole buzz around campus, Kobe's coming, Kobe's coming, Kobe's coming. So literally, right before dinner, you could hear the helicopter. Like, you could hear, like, it stops. Next thing you know, Kobe comes in, and the whole camp, like, there's literally guys going up for a layup, just came down with the ball and immediately walked over to where the court. And he wound up talking to us for, like, probably, like, 45 minutes. And then, you know, Kobe had a reputation of being a little aloof, standoffish, things like that. He took a picture with everybody that asked him to. Like, I mean, again, you had guys that probably should have been checking in games, but they had run to get their phone so they can get a selfie with him. Like, it was unbelievable. That was – Zach LaVine was there. Zach LaVine had just been drafted. Like, nobody knew who Zach LaVine was. Like, D'Angelo Russell was there. Like, it was crazy. But Kobe walked in, and none of them other dudes mattered. And I wasn't a huge Kobe fan, but just to watch how everybody gave him that respect was unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, yeah, man.
That's definitely crazy, man. Rest in
peace to the Mamba, man.
Rest in peace to the Mamba for sure, man. Like you said, man, I mean, I was a LeBron fan growing up. I still am, man. But, like, I mean, after he passed and kind of just – seeing all the respect that kind of came and just like really thinking about it, I'm like, dang, yo, like that really hurt. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, it's crazy to see, man. But I'm glad that like everybody's giving him his flowers, man. And I'm definitely gonna have to get that book when you publish it, man. So don't keep us waiting too long, coach. Cause you know what I'm saying? Once he comes, you know what I'm saying? I'm at that. Matter of fact, we're gonna lock it in. When you write that book, coach, you come back on this podcast. Yeah, we talk about it.
Yeah. I'm gonna need to promote it, man. It's gonna be some stories in there. You know, some people, I'm going to have to maybe get them to sign a, I don't know, whatever the opposite of a non-disclosure agreement. Right? I need them to sign a don't get mad at me agreement, because some of these stories are going to be, you know, be entertaining for others, but maybe not for the people that they're involved.
Now, Coach, man, we can't let you get out of here, man, without asking you this, man. You know, you move on to Virginia Tech, man. So the people of the DMV, man, the math alums, man, they want to know, man, what do you think was your best DeMatha team You watched for 19 years, man. You out the door now. So you know what I'm saying? I don't want to hear no excuses.
No way.
The best team at the match.
No way. There's no way you're going to give me the answer to that. I will definitely take a cue from Coach Wooten. Coach Wooten never would answer best team, best player. He would not do that. And the reason, I mean, there's many reasons why, but like, yo, I still talk to those dudes. And the best thing about that question is it is definitely an argument, which means we've had a lot of good teams that all feel like they should be the one. Now, I will say this. In 2005, 2006, we were 34-1. We won the Hoops USA National Championship. Obviously, from a record and an accolade standpoint, that record was my best record if you don't count last season's 11-0 because we didn't play a full schedule. But that team had Nigel on it. If we had Jeff Allen that year, we wouldn't have lost the one game we lost. But Jeff Allen was had left the season prior to that. We were really good.
Who the other guys on that team with Nigel?
Austin Freeman. Jeff Peterson, Jeray Grant, Isaiah Tate, Joe Smith, Byron Richards, Mikel Arriola. Trying to think. I think Braswell was still there. Chris Braswell was still there. Like we were really good. We were really good. And we should not have lost the one game we lost, but it was at that time in the season where we probably were all tired of each other. And then after the game, we didn't have a close game from that point on for the rest of the season. We were, if I remember correctly, matter of fact, I know I remember correctly, we were 25-0. We went over to O'Connell. We had blown O'Connell out the first time we had played him. So I would say maybe some of us, and this is my job, so it falls on me, but maybe some of the guys weren't as focused as we needed to be, and we wound up losing a really close game at the end just because of, you know, bad coaching and lack of execution. So, but then we won out from there. So, you can argue that team, you know, the Oladipo Grants and those teams, the teams with Desmond Adedigi and those guys the year before, the 2 years before, the 2005-2006 season, you know, Markel Fultz's teams were as talented as any. And then my last couple of years with Earl Timberlake and Justin Moore and Hunter Dickinson and those guys, like, anybody can make an argument, you know. What you're going to hear all those guys, if you get them in a room and have them actually answer that question, what they're going to do is they're all going to argue about, well, what was the schedule you played? Like, yeah, we might have lost three times, but our schedule was tougher and things like that. And, again, that's another thing I'm proud of. Like, we never ducked anybody. Like, we played the best of the best of the best each and every time we could.
Of course, we're running low on time, so I want to thank you for coming on. This has been extremely fun. And obviously, best of luck at Virginia Tech to you and your future endeavors.
Appreciate y'all, man. Don't ever forget. I know y'all. When I see y'all, I'm going to speak. Don't ever forget that, Twins. Come on now.
Always.
The Warriors, Tony Langley's legacy goes way too far with all of us, man.
All righty, guys. That was new Virginia Tech associate head coach and the former Demanda head coach, Mike Jones. Obviously, you know, me and Drew and Coach Jones go way back with the ties to our brother, man. I definitely cool to hear some stories about Billy because don't get to hear those too often, man. It's definitely good to always, you know, people forget, man, that man Billy was really a bucket, man. People want to talk about Carmelo Anthony, man, but Billy was a basket at Syracuse and Demanda Oak Hill, like all that, man.
Now, for real, man, I mean, Billy, he scored double figures in that national championship game. You know what I'm saying? He had double figures in that 90 chip game versus Kansas against Kirk Heinrich, man. I mean, he was really like the floor general, man. I mean, McNamara was obviously placed in point two. And McNamara obviously went crazy in that 90 chip game, man. But Billy was kind of the one that was setting the table, you know, getting everybody the ball, man. He played with great pace. I can remember taking those chips to Villanova. And obviously, when they came to Georgetown at Ryan Center and just watching him play, man, you know, like I said on the interview, man, that, like, he was definitely the reason why I went number 14, man. Like, definitely my inspiration, man. He was a problem, man. His name on the wall up there at Oak Hill for, you know, being an All-American, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, that in and of itself is a lot, man. You with all the guys that came through Oak Hill, man, for, you know, his name to be up there on that wall, man, definitely solidified, man. So, DMV legend, man. You know what I'm saying? We had all these talks, man, in the summer about, you know, on Quinn Live about who a legend, man. We're talking about Chris Wright, Austin Freeman, and all these dudes, man. Billy Elam, man. Stamp, man. Legend in the area, man. I don't know. That was before their era, you know. So I can't really get mad at them for not bringing the name up, man. But for sure, man, we're going to make sure Big Bro name stay popping in DMV, man, and everywhere else, man. So if y'all don't know, go watch some film, man. Billy Elam was a bad dude.
Nah, that's all facts, man. And definitely, obviously, I want to thank Coach Jones for coming on, man. Obviously, did an amazing job being a successor to Morgan Wooten, and now, obviously, going on and coaching at Virginia Tech with Mike Young. He's going to do great things. So definitely want to shout him out for coming on with us as well, man. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Auto Bid, man. As always, make sure you guys are liking, giving us a share, giving us a rating, man. Whatever you listen to this podcast, man, it goes a long way. Tell a friend to tell a friend about the Auto Bid. Contrary to what John Rothstein says, we are also a 52-week out of the calendar year college basketball podcast. So College Hoops Today podcast by John Rothstein is not the only 52-week a year podcast covering college basketball, because the Auto Bid is every week as well. So make sure you guys are giving us some love on social media, and giving us some love whenever you listen to this platform as well. We're gonna let my guy Pull Up Tay take us out with some intro music. And until next week, folks. You beating on me? It's time to get a check, boy. You want a sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You beating on me? What's the topic of discussion? What we talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take your last shot. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy.